Today we have Corey Andrews, and I'm so excited to talk to you today, Corey. We met at Aspen Grove Family Camp in, I guess it's Provo. Is that considered Provo, Utah?
Yeah, Provo Canyon, yep.
Yeah, and you just have some really incredible stories, so I can't wait to share those today. But for anyone who isn't familiar with you yet, can you just share a little bit about who you are?
Yeah, so I'm Corey Andrews. Number one, I'm a husband and father and of six kids, and have an amazing wife. And I also teach seminary and LDS program during school hours for LDS youth, and love that. And then I also run a tour company called High Five Live Tours that kind of branched out of a online social media program that I started called High Five Live. And so, yeah, between all those things, it keeps me out of trouble.
That's awesome. So just for people to get to know you, and for me too, I'm interested in this and we haven't had a chance to talk about it. How did you meet your wife?
Yeah. So Katie and I, I'm from Idaho originally. She's from down in St. George originally. And so we wouldn't have had a chance to meet, except for I was a counselor at a youth program called EFY a few years back.
And love EFY.
Yeah, so fun. I loved it. I had a blast being a counselor there. But it was also, kind of keeping an eye out for anyone that it might be dateable. And at one point I just had this random idea, like, hey, you should ask the youth if they have any referrals for you. And so I got them together and I said, hey guys, I was just wondering if you might sort of maybe possibly have any older sisters that you might
Oh
want
my
to put me in
gosh.
contact with. And most of them were like, no, you're kind of weird. We don't want to be related to you. But one time, one of the sisters in my group, one of the young women, she came up and she's just like, I have an older sister. And I was like, tell me more. And
Oh
she
my
goes,
gosh.
well, she's amazing and you two would be perfect. And I was like, awesome. Like, now what? And she's like, I don't know. And so I did what any good young man at the time would have done. And I Facebook stalked her and
Yes.
found her on Facebook and sent her a
What year was
message.
this?
This would have been 2010.
Okay,
Yeah,
perfect.
2010. So I sent her a message and just a quick, well, hello. I'm your little sister's EFY counselor. I found you on Facebook. It's kind of creepy, but I sent it off. And a few days later, she replied. And so we started chatting. I'd gone back up to Idaho. She was down in St. George. I was poor because I was a EFY counselor. I didn't have any money and to take her out on a date at the time. So it kind of just died off. And we were Facebook friends, but we weren't chatting anymore. Meanwhile, went up in Idaho. I meet another girl and start to really like this other girl. Ask her to marry me. And now I'm engaged. She goes off to school. She meets a guy. They get engaged.
Oh.
And so we're both like on these different paths, getting ready to marry the other people. And then just kind of crazy enough, my engagement fell apart and, that was hard and sad and I was lonely. And then her engagement fell apart a couple months later and she had seen, it's still debatable whether she was Facebook stalking me this time or not, but no, she had seen that I had broken off my engagement. And so she reached out and said, hey, no, this might be weird. We haven't talked in a while, but I was wondering if you had any advice. And I was like, do I have any advice? Yeah, date me. And so no, I just said, hey, I know it can be lonely, so here's my number. And she reached out and the rest is history. We fell in love. It's kind of a crazy story, but super glad the way it worked out.
What a great story. I love that. I've never heard a story quite like that. And I mean, my husband likes to tease me that I dated one of my EFY counselors, which was not true, but I was waiting for you to say that you like married one of your like kids that you were a counselor to. But he likes to say that because one of the guys that I dated for like a minute for a couple months at BYU was a counselor the last year that I went to EFY. So he technically could have
Could have
like
been, yep.
that year, but we didn't cross paths then. But my husband still loves to
He
tease me
counts it.
that, that I dated my EFY counselor. But that's amazing that your story worked out and that the referral system came through strong.
Yep.
And it
Yep.
just all worked out. That's awesome. I love it. Okay. So you guys get married and then have kids and live where, and how does life kind of transpire from there?
Yeah, so we lived in Idaho for a while, and then I got hired teaching seminary, and they moved me down here during that time. So my wife's name is Katie. My name's Corey with a K. And so I thought we kind of got this thing going. And so our
Yeah.
first daughter we named Callie, Callie K. And then our second daughter's named Caitlin. And then we have a Kayla. And then we had a Kennedy. And so we have four girls in a row. And one of my heroes, Russell M. Nelson, he had nine girls in a row. And so when we had
Man.
four girls in a row, I was telling my wife, like, hey, we're not even halfway to how many girls in a row he had before he got a first boy. And but she's like, no. So number five, she decided we'd have our first boy, and his name is Kaysen. And so yeah, the five kids. So Callie's 11 now. We're on our odd years. So Callie's 11, Caitlin's nine, Kayla's seven, Kennedy's five, and Kaysen's three. And yeah, a couple of years ago, when Kaysen was like one and a half, we just had this feeling. We were taking family pictures and just had this feeling that not everyone was there, and so decided, you know what, let's go. Five's a ton of kids,
Might
but
as well throw one more in.
right, yeah, we've already
Why
got
not?
it,
Yeah.
right? So we were like, let's do it, let's make it even, and so everyone has a seat on the roller coaster now, or a seatmate, and then. So we decided, yeah, let's do it. And so we got pregnant, and a couple of months go by, and we do a little gender reveal, and it was really fun. We did like the cupcake one, where my sister-in-law made a bunch of cupcakes, and they're all decorated, all pretty, and inside one of the cupcakes was frosting, the color of the gender, right? And so we
Yes.
go through, we bring all the family over. We're all taking a bite. Everybody takes a bite. We go through every single cupcake until the very last one. It wasn't planned that way. It just kind of how it happened. It
Wow.
was the very last one.
Yeah.
And so I convinced my wife to take a bite with me. And so we took a bite at the same time. And inside was pink frosting. And so it was a little anticlimactic, another girl. No, but we were really excited. We were so excited to have another girl. And we anticipating that, you know, having a baby again, and so exciting. And at 30 or 29 weeks, my wife woke up in the middle of the night, and she woke me up, and she said, hey, we need to go to the hospital, I'm bleeding. And at that point, we definitely thought the worst, you know, and rushed to the hospital. And when we get there, and they do some tests real quickly to find out on baby girl, and it was such a relief when we heard her heartbeat, and we were like, oh wow, you know, she's okay, but what's going on, you know? And so they do some more tests, figure out the bleeding. While they're doing that, they're like, let's do an ultrasound just to see. When they did an ultrasound, they're like, everything looks good except for her stomach. Everything's like measuring normal, but her stomach is measuring it at 40 weeks, and it's only 29 weeks. So that's a problem.
Yeah.
And we didn't know how big of a problem until, you know, a couple minutes later, they're strapping her up to Lifeliter, up to the University of Utah Hospital. And so that was, you know, kind of crazy. I leave my kids here and drive up to the, and as my wife's Lifelighted up to the University of, of Utah Hospital. And we stay there for about 6 days. And they're doing tests and checking on baby girl, and seeing, you know, if she's okay. And just so happened we ended up having one of the absolute best ultrasound readers in the world as our
Wow.
doctor. And she walks in the room, which doesn't usually happen, hadn't happened, and she walks in the room during one of the ultrasounds and is watching while it happens. And then she says, it's time to go. If baby girl's going to have a chance, she needs to come out now.
Wow.
And so yeah, it was a whirlwind of rush to the labor and delivery, get ready for the emergency C-section, and a super sweet doctor comes in and has a very real conversation of, we don't know how this is going to go, and you know, with the complications that there are, that you might need to prepare yourself for the worst, but we're going to
Yeah.
try our best.
Yeah.
And I remember this moment of them rolling my sweetheart out the door and into the operating room, and them handing me some scrubs to go and change. And they said, we'll change and we'll take you back in a minute. And I walked into that hospital bathroom and just remember feeling just so hopeless, helpless, like I couldn't do anything to change or to help or to save anybody, you know, and I didn't like that feeling. And then I remembered, well, there is something I can do. And so I fell to my knees on that bathroom floor and I prayed a prayer unlike I've ever prayed in my life. And I just pleaded for peace and for help and for safety for my wife and for my daughter. And I felt in that moment, I felt God's grace in a way that I've never felt it before. And it filled my heart and filled my limbs. I was able to get up off that bathroom floor and walk into my that operating room, and I watched God perform a miracle as that C-section happened. And they took her out and passed her through a window, and they kind of told us, hey, we're going to put her in through the window and we're going to take care of her. You're not going to see her for the first few minutes. They said it'll probably be 5 minutes before you know anything. So they pass her through the window, close it and close the blinds, and we just wait there. I watch as they sew Katie up and just holding their hand and waiting and waiting. And they move us back into the room after that, and we're waiting and we haven't heard anything for a while. And then finally they come in and they said, well, when she was born, her lung collapsed, and there were a lot of issues, but we were able to get a tube in and we were able to help that lung and we were able to stabilize her. Would you like to meet her? So that moment of my wife couldn't meet her quite yet, but that moment walking into that room and meeting this little angel for the first time was amazing. She had tubes coming out of everywhere and out of her side and mouth so it was hard that way. And her stomach was very large, like visibly large. But she was a fighting, I could just tell, like, and they let me like just hold her hand for a second. I could just tell this little girl was a fighter, and there was a reason that she came. And so I said, okay, what's next? And they said, well, we're gonna try to stabilize her to the point where we can roll her, put her in an incubator and roll her to Primary Children's Hospital, which there's a bridge that connects the University of Utah to the Primary Children's Hospital. And so they did that, and I was able to follow her over and had to leave my wife behind, which is kind of hard, after what everything that she'd been through. But she said, no, go be with our daughter. And so followed our daughter. When we got there, one of the coolest scenes was rolling as we rolled, they rolled her into her room there at Primary Children's. There was just this team of the smartest people in the world, ready to go to work on saving our daughter's life. And man, those people are some of my heroes. They just almost immediately they took her into to have an operation done on her stomach to relieve the pressure there, and were able to get a pound of fluid off of her. She was only 5 pounds, right? So
Oh my gosh.
a fifth of her, was they were able to take that fluid out of her stomach, and found the perforation in her intestine, and were able to kind of temporarily fix things for and relieve that pressure. And then for the next couple weeks, we just stayed by her bedside. My wife didn't get to even see her until 24 hours after she was born, and didn't
And
get
that's
to.
hard. C-section recovery, like I've done that 5 times, and it's
Oh,
hard to
wow.
even stand up
Yep.
24 hours later, let
Yeah.
alone like, switch hospitals and,
Yep.
so I can't even imagine. But I mean, a mom will do anything to meet her baby. So
Right. Yeah. Oh, and she's a warrior in that way. And she actually got an infection on her
I remember that.
incision as well. And so that was another, on top of what we were already going through. And then having that, she's having to like poke herself, and give herself shots. And it's like, man, you are great. I couldn't do all that. And given all that she went through, and she didn't we didn't she didn't get to touch her for a couple of days. And then and because of her condition, we could hold her but not like snuggle her. It was more like we'll lift her off the bed while they changed the bedding and then put her back down, and that was like the extent of holding her. And so it felt so like distant in a lot of ways, like
Yeah.
she was we were there with her, but she's in this incubator and they're trying to help her out. They told us initially, they're like, she, because of her condition and the sedation that we're gonna, keep her under, she probably won't wake up, move, open her eyes very much. But I remember on day three, I walked into her room just by myself. There was not even a nurse around. And as I walked up to her little bed, her incubator there, her eye like peeked open at me. And then she did this
Oh.
little like wave with her hand, like, and it was the cutest thing I've ever seen in my life. I was just like, man, I am in love with this little baby. She's amazing. And she was awake as we went through this process in the hospital, like there were a bunch of ups and downs. Like there were great days and then there were really tough days. But I initially, like I started telling her story because people from the beginning, people were like, keep us updated, tell us what's going
Right.
on. So I ended up just using social media to like tell her story.
And I met you when you guys were like right in the middle of all of this. You told Cameron's story, the last you kept calling her the last cupcake girl. During Aspen Grove, they had like an evening fireside, and I felt so drawn to her story and like really felt like I need to try to be part of this and pray for her and really be invested in her well-being, So I think probably everyone that heard her story felt that way.
There was this connection that she brought to people that I'd never met before, including you and others that I met at Aspen Grove, or people from the story online reached people that I was just kind of keeping it up our family up to date, but it ended up reaching around the world to strangers, and people almost daily were telling me about prayers that they were saying. I got messages about people that are like, I haven't prayed in years, but I prayed
Oh.
for Cameron, or people that there was this firefighting crew that was during the summer, and they were out fighting forest fires. They like sent us a message, and they're like, Cameron is our hero,
Oh.
and we are fighting these fires for Cameron. And it was just like these little things of these people that just felt inspired by this little girl who never left the hospital. You know what I mean? Like never,
Yeah.
she's just there, never moved off a bed barely, and it was so powerful what she was able to come and change, not only in me and my wife and our family's lives, but in strangers, and people were telling us about taking her name with them to their religious services and going to putting her name in temples, and it was just so powerful to see this effect that this little girl had, and it felt like an honor to tell her story. And
Yeah.
in reality, that I got to be the one to kind of type it out and tell her story. And it was also comforting to me to kind of journal it, and
Yeah.
keep track of things. But just so amazing. And the people we met and the connections that we met during that time were everything. On day 28, my wife finally got to hold her. It was just like a day or two after my wife's birthday. So it was a kind of a late birthday present, but she got to hold her for the first time and snuggle her. And that was so sweet and just a powerful moment to see that warrior mom with that last cupcake girl, that was
Yes.
such a fighter. And we had high hopes, and we went up to Aspen Grove, and people were praying for her there. Then on day 37, we got a phone call and they asked us to come in. And one of the challenges was like leaving our family, our other five kids at home, and making sure
Right.
they felt loved during this time, and then
Right.
bouncing up to Salt Lake because it's about an hour away. But we just happened to be up there in Salt Lake, and they gave us a call and we said, we'll be right in. And the doctors pulled us aside they said, she's a fighter and she has fought to be with you and be with your family. But we've done all that we can do to help in this fight. It's time to prepare, to maybe say goodbye. We're going to try a few more things, but it's not looking good. And that was, as was hard, to hear. And they said, what can we do? Is there anything we can do? And we said, well, because of COVID, Our kids haven't had a chance to meet her. Is there any way that that we could bring our kids in? And they said, we'll move mountains. We'll figure out some way to get your kids in here. That will happen. And they did. They snuck them in the back, and broke all the rules, bring our kids in and bring it into that room. And we got to take one a family picture together. And that was a powerful moment to be there as a family. And we felt heaven near a lot that day. We had an opportunity also that day to, I called my religious leader and asked him to come and help me give a special prayer for our daughter. And so my bishop jumped in his car and drove up, and we were able to give her a baby blessing. And after we gave her that blessing, my bishop was standing there with me in that room. And really the most terrible moment of my life that I can think of as far as like sorrow and sadness. But he turned to me and he said, "How do you feel?" And I remember pausing for a minute and really like searching how I was feeling in that moment. And the only word that could come to my mind was peace. Again, I wasn't a peaceful moment, right? It shouldn't have been a peaceful moment at all, right? As I watched my angel daughter pass away, I shouldn't have felt peace right then. But I feel like the Savior was there and was helping us go through that very, very hard and difficult thing. And I have, as it hasn't always been peaceful, right? Like I haven't always felt that same peace, but it's been nice to be able to turn back and to remember that moment where I did feel peace and I did feel like he was there for me. At 3 a.m. the next morning, I stayed in her room. My wife went into another room to get some rest. At 3 a.m., they woke me up and they told me it was time. And so I went and got my wife and brought her into the room. And for the first time and the last time, I got to hold my daughter in my arms. And that was beautiful and terrible at both at the same time. And then on our way, so then it kind of felt hard, right, to leave her there, even though we knew she was gone, she'd passed away. It was hard to leave her, and so we just kind of stayed in that room for a minute, but then said goodbye to her body and left the room. And it felt weird to like gather our things from the different places we've been staying and then jump in our car and drive home without our baby girl. And I thought of a lot of the things that I'd never get to do with her, and I was focused on a lot of that, and it was hard and it was sad. And then I had to think, well, now what do I tell everybody? What do I tell all the people that have been praying for her? What do I tell my kids, and who've been just dying to meet their baby sister, just waiting for that opportunity, who did just get to meet her the day before, but now she's not coming home. And in that moment, I thought of the Savior and when he went into the Garden of Gethsemane, and that moment where he had a prayer of, "Let this cup pass, let there be another way." And in a way, that prayer that he had, that he said in the Garden of Gethsemane, it wasn't answered, at least not in the way that he had hoped. And he did suffer and he did go through hard and difficult things and was ultimately crucified and died. And so I felt near to him in that moment. And that was the message I wanted to share with the world. It was that just because our prayers for Cameron weren't answered yet, because Jesus Christ's prayer wasn't answered then, our prayers one day will be answered. And we will get to hold our daughter again. And she will be a part of our family.
Actually, I would love if you could share just a little bit about that, about like your belief of the afterlife and what you've just said, because I know that, not everyone is sure what they believe about that.
I thank you for the opportunity to share. And I don't know that I had a strong belief. I there were things I believed before this, but this process has strengthened my belief in the afterlife, right? And that there is more after this life. Partly because of the moments when I felt heaven near and I felt those who've passed on. I remember a day when I was heading home, and from the hospital to come home to be with my kids. And I felt like there were angels in my car with me, that I wasn't alone, and felt my grandpa near. And so those little moments, but then also little moments I've had since Cameron passed, that made me feel like she's okay, and she is still there. And one of the things that another thought on the way home that I had, and I turned to my wife and I said, you know, Cameron had a really unfair mortal life. Like her journey, like, it's not fair that she never got to run, or never got to dance, or never got to sing, or do these things that my little girls love to do. It was not fair. She just spent 38 days in a hospital in pain. Like, that's tough. And the thought that I had as we were kind of talking about that unfairness was, now she doesn't have to. That now she can leave the hospital. And maybe now at times she can be with our family and go do fun things and be there when we do dance parties, or be there when we. And so we went home, and that's what we told our kids. We're like, we believe that Cameron, her body is dead, but her spirit lives. And that maybe at times she can be with us and do fun things with us. And so we created this thing, like Fun with Cameron. And it became part of, like, our every time we go and do something fun, like, let's go do something fun with Cameron. And our kids wanted to do something right then. They're like, let's do something right now. And so we're like, okay, what do we do? And it was summertime and hot. And so they're like, water, something with water. And there's this little place in Spanish Fork where we live called the Dripping Rock. And it just seemed right because of the water coming out of the rocks. And so we went there and played and had fun. And as we were walking back to the car afterwards, it started raining lightly. And when we got home, there's a big rainbow right next to our house. And it's just like a cool moment of, like, yeah, like, she lives. And though we can't see her, and though we desperately want to see her, you know, and miss her every single day, we believe that because of Jesus Christ and because he was resurrected, that one day so will Cameron, that her one day her spirit and her body will again be reunited, and we will get to hold her, and we will get to love her and hug her, and we just can't wait. We can't wait. And that message of the Savior Jesus Christ, and of his love, and that his prayer wasn't answered so that our prayers one day can be. That message gives me so much hope. And every day I think of that hope that he brings me, that one day I'll get to see my daughter again.
Such a beautiful story. Thank you so much for sharing all of that and for sharing, the little tender moments too, and the things that you guys experienced as a family and you yourself, Corey. I have a kind of tough question for you that just keeps coming to my mind that I feel like, especially since you're a seminary teacher, I can ask you. But I feel like sometimes when these types of things happen or when they happen in the world, people say, like, how can you believe in God? How can God let bad things happen? So
Yeah.
how do you teach people about that?
Well, that is such a good question, and a hard one to answer with just a simple, you know, bumper sticker phrase. You know, I wish I just had a simple answer, because there are so many hard things. And I remember one time telling me and my wife's engagement story that I started with, and I talked about the trial of having a broken off engagement, and how that was really hard for me at the time, like one of the hardest things I'd been through. And afterwards, one time when I told that story and talked about how hard that was, but that I had hope, you know, because of these things that I've talked about, because I believe in God and believe that he's got a plan for us. I had this lady come up who'd been through some really hard things, and she said, "You don't know, you know, you don't really know that." And my heart just, like, went out to her, you know, like, you know, I never want it to come across as, you know, because you know, my, you know, comparing trials of, like, I've been through the hardest things ever, so I know that, you know, I don't want it to come across that way at all. But because of these things that I have gone through that I believe are pretty unfair, and that there are a lot of unfair things about life in general. But I also believe that if we think about unfairness, like what the Savior, what Jesus Christ went through, being a perfect being, he knows what it feels like to be treated unfairly. The way that he was treated and ultimately crucified, that was maybe the most unfair that ever happened to anybody, because of how good he was. But he that that process of what he went through that unfairness was necessary for God's plan to be fulfilled, for all of his children to be resurrected and one day return to him. So Jesus went through that unfairness for us. I believe that sometimes we go through unfair things in this life so that we can be there for others. So that we can, when someone comes to me now and says, we lost our child, man, my heart goes out to them in a way that it never could have before. And I'm able to feel an empathy for them that I never could have experienced without going through what we went through with Cameron. And not saying that, that I wouldn't want Cameron back in my life. Of course, I would. That's definitely my preference. But as I've had experiences like that to sit with people who've gone through these difficult things, I've become grateful for that experience that we've gone through, because now I can, in a way, be like the Savior's to stand in his shoes and hug someone who's going through something really hard.
Yeah, and we
And ultimately,
believe that
yeah.
that's like a promise that we make, that we'll do that we'll like be
Yeah.
there for other people and comfort them when they're going through hard things.
Exactly. Exactly. And what a blessing. Another one of my heroes, Thomas S. Monson, he used to say, there's no greater joy than realizing you were an answer to somebody's prayer, right? And
Yes.
the more we go through, the more ability and capability I think we have to be an answer to somebody's prayer, or be the Savior's hands, and lift those around us. And so that's just one answer that I give. And then the ultimate, my favorite answer, I think, to that question is I believe that all that is unfair about life can be made right through the atonement of Jesus Christ. That one day he's going to come, and all those tears that we shed from those unfair experiences that we've gone through, he's going to wipe them away, and we're going to see with clarity God's beautiful plan. And we're gonna have a joy that can last forever because of it. And so that's kind of what I believe in. That again, that hope is what I want to share with the world, and also what sustains me every day.
I love that. I have a question for you about while you guys were going through that trial and then after too, because anyone who's lost a family member knows that grief isn't just a couple of weeks or a few
Yeah.
months thing. It's an ongoing process. What helped you guys? What was the most helpful thing for you?
That's such a good question. I think those experiences, I think that what I mentioned about those fun with Cameron experiences, those have been super helpful to us. The ability to do fun things with our family, and to also be open with it and talk about it together. That's been helpful. And like you said, it hasn't always been rainbows over our house,
Yeah.
that was a special moment, but there have been really, really tough and difficult days, and lots of tears shed from us and our kids. And we also recently found a group that we've been able to get together, a grief group, and those people have become some of our heroes as well, to have a place where we can go and talk and discuss. Because after I went through what I went through, I kind of craved that. When we went through that, I was like, I want to connect with other people who've experienced this. I want to learn from them. I want, and for a while, it took us a while to find that. And so actually, one thing that I'd like to do eventually, this is a dream of mine, is to create something, a bereaved believers group, where we can meet together and share messages of hope. But I'll keep you updated, and that's in the works.
Okay.
But
Yeah.
yeah, that's just that group, and having a place where I can hear other people's stories, and then also share Cameron's story. That's been huge for us.
That's really cool. And I know it's really important from my husband lost his brother. Well, he's lost two brothers, and
Oh,
from other
wow.
friends who have gone through similar things, that it's so important to still say their names and to still tell their stories and keep their memories alive, So I love that we got to do that today. I do want to shift gears just a little bit and Well, actually a lot. And I mean, just touching on what you said a second ago, where you were like, this is a dream of mine. It hasn't come to life yet, but you did create something pretty cool. That's like an online community for believers. So can you talk about that for a second? Because that was actually my first exposure to your company or organization, when our mutual friend Amy asked me to share on that group. So talk about that for just a minute.
Oh yeah, Amy's incredible. And so a couple years ago we started this program called High Five Live, and it's on Facebook. It's something we do every day. We invite somebody to come and share an inspiring message, a message of hope on there. And we've been doing it almost every day for 8 years. And
Wow.
a ton of incredible people have been involved, including you, right? Who's shared a message on there and others. And it's just become this community of uplifting messages and something you can rely on almost every day. There's going to be something on there that's helpful, hopeful, and inspiring. And so that's also from that we've done that for years, and then it turned into another program that we're doing now called High Five Live Tours, which kind of fits with the Fun with Cameron thing, but it's an opportunity to go to different places. We do LDS Church History tours. We do a couple of those every summer, and then we also have started doing some cruises, and then we're also doing our first humanitarian trip to Honduras this summer. And that's been so fun to get together with incredible people and see incredible places. But also with this humanitarian trip, we're excited to go and serve and do some fun things there as well. So it's yeah, that program has definitely been a blessing to me in my life. The connections that I've been able to make and the inspiration that I've gained from watching those messages has just been awesome. And so yeah, thanks for asking about that. And if you're interested in find out more about the tours, our tour company website is highfivelifetours.com.
Cool. Yeah, it's such an inspiring group that you've collected on Facebook, and then it looks like so much fun what you guys do with your summer tours. So I'm so glad you got to share about that. Okay, last question, Corey. If there's one message that you want the people who are listening to this to remember, what do you want that one message to be?
Oh man, I think it's that you're amazing. My daughter changed the world in 38 days by the people that her story has reached and inspired, and she never even got out of the hospital, right? Never even left that hospital bed, and she's continuing to through. Her story and who she is, she's continuing to change the world, her influence. And I don't think we realize how influential we can be, right? We can get out of our beds, most of us, right? And we can, even if we can't, right? We can reach out and we can love those around us. And I truly believe that within each and every one of us is something incredible. And that if we're just willing to do our best and to trust God, that we too can have a major influence on the world. And that's kind of what High Five Live has shown, that we have people from all over the world who've come on and just shared a story, and those little messages have inspired people around the world. And so I believe everyone has a story and everybody has a message. And so that would be my message. You are absolutely incredible. So go change the world.
I love that. Thanks so much, Corey. Where can people find you if they want to follow along and if they want to join High Five Live and join the Facebook group and then your tours? Tell us one more time.
Yeah, so I'm on Facebook. Feel free to add me as a friend, Corey Andrews, or I also have a page, Brother Corey Andrews is my page on Facebook, and I'm also on Instagram at Corey Andrews, then at High Five Live. So on Facebook, it's at HI and then spelled out FIVELIVE. So High Five Live on Facebook, and then our tour company is at HI number 5 Live Tours, and you can find that on Facebook and Instagram, and then highfivelivetours.com as well. So yeah, lots of places, but lots of fun things.
Awesome. Well, thank you again, especially for sharing Cameron's story today. That was
Well,
really
thanks for
special.
letting me. You're amazing. Love what you're doing, and thanks for letting me be part of this.
Thanks so much for listening to Mint Arrow Messages. We're so grateful that you spent time with us today. Make sure you go follow us at Corinne Stoko or at Mint Arrow Messages on Instagram. And then if you have a second and you love the show, I would love it so much if you'd leave a rating or a review on Apple Podcasts. That's the only way people can find out about us if they haven't heard about us before. So just go tap the stars, leave a rating or a review if you have a second. We would appreciate it so much.